I'm Ken Fate, and this is Raven News. With no change in the results after absentee ballot counting last week, the Sitka Assembly officially certified this year's municipal election at its regular meeting last night and swore in two new members. Municipal Clerk Colleen Ingman did the honors.
That I will faithfully discharge my duties.
I will faithfully discharge my duties.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
Congratulations.
Thank you for your vote.
That's Aaron Swanson and Ben Miyasato taking the oath of office. Both spoke briefly and thanked voters. Miyasato encouraged higher turnout in the next election. Before they stepped down, departing members Tor Christensen and Michelle Putz were honored by their colleagues. Christensen has served three terms from 1998 to 2004 and this latest from 2010 to 2013. Christensen thought this assembly worked together better than in his prior service. Michelle Putz has only been on the assembly for 1 year. She credited the staff for giving the assembly purpose. She started to thank people, but could not quite get through it.
And the administrator, they kept us out of trouble and gotten us into trouble as needed. Thank you to you guys. This has been such a great opportunity to learn leadership. And I'm a crier.
Putz went on to say that she planned to try assembly service again when she had more time. Her absence was felt all of 10 minutes. She later spoke as a member of the public, encouraging the assembly to move ahead on a wind power test. The assembly moved its regular meeting to a Monday night this week in order to attend a reception for the Alaska Travel Industry Association conference, which is taking place in Sitka through Thursday. In the middle of building the most expensive hydro project in the community's history, the assembly took a few minutes to look at some comparatively inexpensive energy. It gave the electric department the go-ahead to work with the Alaska Energy Authority on a wind power test. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Wind power has been discussed before in Sitka and dismissed since the area's hydro prospects are so good. But Utility Director Chris Bruton says we've been looking at wind power the wrong way. Sitka is never going to run on wind, but that doesn't mean it can't be useful.
It would essentially act as a trickle charger to keep the water in the lake is what would happen.
Bruton asked the assembly for permission to coordinate with the Alaska Energy Authority to install 3 10-meter towers and 1 30-meter tower to gather data on Sitka's wind. The test towers are a far cry from the huge utility-grade turbines being installed in California and other parts of the lower 48. They look more like antennas, tall poles with anemometers mounted at various heights.
If it does turn out we find a good site in the future we do install a wind turbine, there will be aesthetic impacts and other kind of things that we have to accept as a community to put up the wind tower.
Bruton says the AEA begins with a public meeting. Hearing concerns about aesthetics is important, so is hearing about where it's windy.
A lot of folks are familiar with some of these canyons and where the wind whistles through nonstop, and so that would be one of the key things we look for in public input.
The test towers would be paid for by the AEA. All Sitka's utility would pay for is installation and data collection, which lasts anywhere from 1 to 2 years. The towers should be installed close to Sitka's existing generation system. Bruton thinks somewhere back along the ridges behind Green Lake might work out. The AEA has produced a wind map. Southeast is generally considered a poor prospect for wind power. When he worked in Ketchikan, Bruton asked and was turned down for a similar test. This time, the AEA came to him.
There's been some good experiments and some good situations. For example, the Kodiak wind integration has been very successful out there. They have started out with 3 turbines, and now they're going to 6. And they're significantly reducing their diesel generation. Mm-hmm. So in their case, it's really been a positive thing. And for those who have been to Kodiak recently, you'll see the wind turbines up on top of Pillar Mountain right downtown.
Assembly member Matt Hunter teaches math and science at Mount Edgecombe High School. He spearheaded a wind turbine project there, which still operates next to the Maple Dock. Hunter was eager to have Sitka work with the AEA.
A couple years ago, we put a wind turbine up at Mount Edgecombe High School campus. It's a 60-foot tower. I've walked around it almost daily during the school year, or biked by it at least. Haven't found any bird kill, which is fantastic for 2 years. And it's produced just over 2,000 kilowatt hours, which is 2 megawatt hours, which is about 10 minutes of a 15-megawatt electrical load, which is what Sitka routinely pulls. So that little turbine, and in its 2 years has powered Sitka for about 10 minutes, which is kind of cool.
The Assembly voted 4-0 to have the administration draft a memorandum of agreement with the Alaska Energy Authority. Members Esquiro, Reif, and Hackett were absent. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Sitka Assembly heard from a local business owner concerned that the city was doing too much purchasing online. Karen Parker with the Alaska Computer Center told the Assembly that city purchasing at her store over the last 4 years had dropped by 60%. She claimed that City Hall, the hospital, and the school district were making the vast majority of their purchases of computers and computer-related products off-island. And she was not talking about the big bid awards.
If it's within the capacity of a local company to bid on a project, by all means, they should be given that opportunity. But for this discussion, we're addressing regular, everyday purchases for all Sitka businesses, not just ours.
Parker said that volume purchasing would actually help local businesses keep their prices competitive with online vendors. She advocated for making it part of city department heads' duties to report their online versus local purchases on a monthly basis. Municipal Attorney Robin Kocek said that particular idea was not going to fly.
I know that most of the staff, when quizzed on that, thought that that would be really onerous and also not cost-effective for the city.
The four Assembly members present thought it was already informal policy to make as many purchases locally as possible. The item was brought forward by Matt Hunter and Michelle Putz. As Putz was stepping down from the Assembly, Hunter agreed to find another co-sponsor before advancing the idea to ordinance form. And before her term ended, Michelle Putz asked for an update on the Sitka Climate Action Plan. Prior to her Assembly service, Putz chaired the task force that prepared the 68-page document in 2010. Public Works Director Michael Harmon said it was still a roadmap for energy improvements in city facilities. The department was in discussions with a contractor who would participate in a joint venture to upgrade energy systems holistically in all city buildings, the schools, and the hospital.
And we've done some preliminary work, and it does look like we can yield enough savings through a multitude of lighting improvements to the heating and HVAC systems throughout our buildings that those energy savings could pay for themselves in about a 10-year payback.
Harmon said the outcome would not just be improvements in efficiency, but also having the latest and greatest in air handling, controls, and equipment. Construction workers in Juneau are building a new Alaska State Libraries, Archives, and Museums building. And inside the old building, a small team of museum professionals and volunteers is preparing to move. They're packing up the entire Alaska State Museum collection, ranging from a 45-foot umiak to half-inch tall ivory pieces. Only 5% of the museum's collection is displayed at any given time. The rest is stored in the basement. KTOO's Lisa Fu took a tour of the museum basement to find out what it takes to move a museum.
As conservator for the Alaska State Museum, Ellen Carley is responsible for figuring out how to pack up more than 32,000 objects. It involves opening every drawer in every storage unit and coming up with a plan for each item.
Like this drawer, for example, has several boxes in it already, which are really easy to travel. But this drum, which is from the Arctic Winter Games, it's a walrus stomach drum from 1974, and it has signatures of people all over. It's very delicate.
Carley says she and other museum staff members pack and move objects all the time, for exhibits or to go on loan. That's part of their job description. But moving an entire collection is a once-in-a-career type of thing. There's no manual on how to pack up a museum collection. So Carley resorted to more pedestrian means. She Googled it.
If you look on the internet for good methods for packing museum artifacts, and you try to search Google Images or whatever, you'd think there would be a lot of images, but there's not nearly as many as we'd like to see.
So she's had to improvise. Carley has come up with about a dozen different techniques for packing various artifacts, including dance fans with feather appendages, ivory cribbage boards, spruce root baskets, and a 3-foot-high piece of red tree coral. She walks around the basement with a yellow legal pad, scrutinizing each artifact and writing down a plan to stabilize it. After she's gone through all the objects, she tapes her handwritten notes and diagrams to the outside of the cabinet.
Every cabinet, every drawer, every item has to have a plan.
Carly heads up a team of staff and volunteers who are tackling different aspects of the packing. On this day, museum professional John Loring is focused on ivory. He wears cotton gloves and is in the process of creating custom storage mounts for carved ivory pipes.
Ivory is one of the most fragile objects we have in the collection.
Loring sits by a table filled with cutting materials, measuring devices, a glue gun, a spool of cotton ribbon, and different size scraps of foam and cardboard.
Some of these are really complicated, and you have to cut exactly the right angle to support the object, and it's not so easy. I can probably do about 12 to 15 of these a day.
The museum has 70 ivory pipes in its collection. Loring is also making custom mounts for masks. There are 600 of those. Volunteer Fran Dameron has been helping out at the museum for 14 years. At the moment, she's putting numbers on mining artifacts.
Did you see these enormous wrenches down here? I wouldn't try to lift it. That's why I was working on the floor.
The numbers are linked to the museum's database, which keeps track of all the collection items. Carly says the process of having to look through every storage unit has helped the team locate what are called registration problems, items without a number.
This museum goes back to 1900, so we've got 113 years of potential clerical errors.
The doors of the new State Libraries, Archives, and Museums building open in the spring of 2016. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
That's Raven News for this hour. The time is 8 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCIW Sitka. Big winds headed this way this afternoon and through tonight from the south and southeast up to 20 and 30 miles an hour, gusting up to 50.